Hello and welcome to Heroic Stats, a podcast by Any Heroics, where we look at the stats, the meta, the GBHL season, and anything else we want to talk about. My name's Stephen, and today for episode number one, our inaugural episode, we're going to be talking about our planned hobby projects for 2024, the 2023 season, the stats, as well as the first two tournaments of this weekend, the Battle of Numerous Tears and Into the West. So first of all, a little bit of introduction. My name's Stephen. Hopefully you've been watching the Any Heroics YouTube channel. If you have, you'll have been seeing my horrendous mug as I get pasted by other people on our YouTube channel in bat reps. I'm one of the three hosts. We've also got Any Heroics John. John, have a little chat about yourself.
I'm John. I think I've appeared in a grand total of one video. I got into the hobby last year. Into the West 2023 was my first tournament in Lord of the Rings, so it's nice to kind of come first, full circle. In a past life, I was a dirty 40k player, but I've kind of switched up now to try and be as competitive as I can, but also doing quite a lot of hobby as well on the side. I think my favorite army is probably Angmar, but they've kind of fallen on the wayside as I've tried to chase the meta a little bit harder.
We couldn't possibly comment on that now, John. And Dave, who are you?
Hi, I'm Dave. I am a slight, maybe a slightly more established competitive player in the UK SBG scene. I've come second in the league the last 2 years, and I've been very active recently. I primarily play this game competitively, but I try and hobby here and there. You may have seen me on the battle reports. I've done a couple of those. And I'm very, I love to talk about method, good exercise for all of us.
And just to round things off, talk a little bit about myself beyond my name. I've been playing this game for about 10 years, mostly casually, been playing competitively for about a year. I'm also the current GBHL rankings officer, so hopefully that will back up my stats background in terms of knowing what's going on a little bit. So first of all, let's just have a little chat about what we're planning on getting up to, or potentially already getting up to for 2024 hobbying. John, kick us off. What's your current army on the table?
I've got two on the go at the moment. To no one's surprise, they're both been quite successful, as we'll cover in the stats last year. One of them is Arnor and one of them is Hunter Orcs, so trying to do my best Jake Ralston impression. So that's what I'm working on. I think Josh, another one of our teammates in the Heroics, is actually planning on kind of covering all of our future hobby projects in an upcoming video.
He is indeed. Worth noting that we are missing a few of our members for this first initial episode. We just wanted to get something out at the start of the year. So hopefully we'll be soon joined by Josh, who everyone knows as the lovely Bristolian guy with long hair, Elliot, the shorter hair guy who has disappeared recently because he has a girlfriend, and Jordan, the very long haired guy with a lovely beard who likes playing The Watcher. We're hoping to get a few hobby videos up on the channel here and there to intersperse the battle reports as well. And Dave, do you want to have a little chat about what you're up to this year in terms of hobbying?
Well, yeah, it's going to be pending really about depending on what I want to work on next. I'm sort of at a bit of a crossroads with army choices. I'm always looking to expand my Minas Tirith. It's one of my favorite armies that I've painted. I love to expand my Cirith Ungol, even though I've got more of that than anyone could ever use because it's not a very good army at high points. I love to make all my armies as cohesive as possible, and if I find the time, I might even build the rest of my army of Lake Town, which I really didn't enjoy putting those miniatures together to the point where I actually borrowed some rather than actually finish them because I hated doing it so much. But at some point, I will finish doing it.
The original fine cast and the current fine cast for those models, it's is pretty bad with a joint.
Nice to have a heat gun on hand if you have one, because you'll glue an arm and you'll glue a hand, and then you go to glue the other arm and there's like a 5 millimeter gap, and you're thinking, okay, that's not right.
And stupid. Personally, my hobby project is from my Secret Santa this year, which is you can see the box. It doesn't actually say what's in the box. It's elves. It's Thranduil's halls. That's going to be my project, because obviously I've got almost 2,000 points of Rivendell. Maybe I love Lothlorien. I've got maybe 1,200 points of Lothlorien. Might as well finish off the trifecta.
But for any podcast viewers, I'm copying Stephen and holding up Thranduil's elk, who's been zenithed and is ready to go.
Oh, lovely. I mean, the elk is obviously not the meta choice, but, you know, we move.
It's a nice miniature.
It is absolutely gorgeous. I think it was the one of the hobby votes for best miniature of whichever year it was released, because Warhammer community release articles every year of which do you think is our best miniature, and I think it was the MESBG vote to go into that contest, which is quite nice because it is absolutely fantastic. Great bit from the Hobbit movies, whether you like them or not. The charge into the ruined city of Dale by Thranduil and the following scene, absolutely gorgeous.
That could be a future podcast episode, reviewing the Hobbit movies.
Reviewing the Hobbit movies.
Yeah. If it's a quiet week in tournaments, we will cover our thoughts on the Hobbit movies.
The days of there being any quiet weekends in the GBHL are long gone, my friend.
Yeah. So, talking of the GBHL, let's have a little look at the last year podium stats, kindly presented by John Partridge. So first of all, we've got the list of GBHL 100 good podiums. We'll just quickly run through those now. So we've got Lothlorien and, before I start, it's worth noting that this includes allies. So if a faction appears here, it means it has appeared as part of an army list, or potentially full of the army list, and it's been on a GBHL 100 podium. So first of all, we've got 7 appearances from Lothlorien and the Misty Mountains. We've got 6 from Erebor Reclaimed. We've got 5 from Rivendell, the Fellowship, Halls of Thranduil. We've got 4 from Minas Tirith, Arnor, Iron Hills. We've got 2 from Numenor and Vanquishers of Necromancer.
That's 3.
Oh, sorry, 3. I can't count. I am the numbers guy. We've got 2 from Defenders of Helm's Deep, Survivors of Lake Town, Beornings, White Council, and Army of Thrall. And we've got 1 respectively from a host of other factions. So anything initially standing out to you guys? I know quite a few of these are your responsibility, Dave. You're why they're there.
I think, Stephen, you're also responsible for at least 1 of the Lothlorien and 2 of the Rivendells with your Lord of the Imps. Was it Lord of the Imps? Harry Parkhill's event.
Yeah, it's 1 and 1. 1 Lothlorien and 1 Rivendell, because it's an alliance. However, you have just alluded at what I was about to get.
So this is only good factions. So majority of my, more of my podiums are with evil factions than with good. But I think it's pretty telling that Lothlorien and Misty Mountains are at the top next to each other, because that combination is a specific combo. Because Galadriel is excellent value and leads really good troops to add to an alliance, especially since the Lothlorien can ally with literally everything in good. But the only downside is she's a hero of legend who's not a very good leader for Contest of Champions, so that naturally segues into having Gwaihir, who is also able to ally with everything in good, is one of the only monsters in the good side, and is a hero of legend, which conveniently means he can
Trump Galadriel's
leader. Heroic status to be your leader. It's pretty telling, I think, that the 7 Misty Mountain podiums, I would be very surprised if any of those had more from the Misty Mountains than just Gwaihir. I think none of them will have done. I don't think any Eagle lists have actually podiumed. I think that's purely going to be Lake Town and Friends. And then later in the year, it'll be like Gwaihir allied into Numenor. I think I saw a few Gwaihirs. I think there were 2 Gwaihirs on the podium at 1,000 points. That makes sense. Yeah. he's a strong component in those kind of lists.
The thing I heard,
Halls of Thranduil is just going to be Legolas.
It's going to be a Legolas with a warband drop of maybe a Sentinel and some Cav.
Yeah.
The thing I heard you mention, Dave, in your recent appearance on Entmoot podcast was talking about how on your team trip to Poland, you noticed a lot of the European kind of players were a lot more embracing of kind of yellow alliances and souping up. Do you think that's kind of reflected in this kind of, at least on the good side of things, this podium kind of placings that we're seeing?
It is reflecting it, because the Erebor reclaimed again is powerful in alliances more so than it is by itself. I mean, if you're going to go dwarves and elves, the best way to do it is, one of the best ways, you grab a tasty looking hero from Erebor Reclaimed, likely Thorin, King Under the Mountain, and then you take a tasty looking ally, probably Gwaihir, probably Galadriel, you know, that kind of thing. Those combinations are powerful and, you know, safe. But I think there's another, what I was getting at the end move was, I think there's what I said was, I feel like in the UK there's still a certain reluctance to properly embrace true full alliance where theme goes out the window. People do that in evil, but good, it somehow feels wrong to say you're running Thorin along with Minas Tirith or something. I mean, that's not actually a legal alliance, but that kind of thing is more off-putting to people than running Mordor and Isengard or something. You know, those kind of soupy alliances in evil feel less wrong, just because in good, the alliances are, like, we know the characters better in good, so it feels wrong to have a combination of characters that makes no sense. But from a perspective of the gameplay, there shouldn't be anything wrong with that. But I think the reason the Lake Town and Friends alliance was specifically nerfed in the last FAQ in August was that exact impression. People react worse to seeing the Master plus Galadriel plus Gwaihir than they do, you know, Suladan and, you know, Cand or whatever, you know. That's a bad example, but you know what I mean.
Yeah,
I mean,
I've got to really... Queen
and Mordor and Suladan or something, which again,
got to bad really example, that's a bad hand alliance. It to you there. That is a good example of a strange alliance. I think these stats are, a lot of them, like, I see my beloved Rivendell up there. I know I'm responsible for one of them. However, I know in my heart of hearts that the majority of them will be Círdan and Glorfindel drops.
Back in the day.
Is there anything you guys are surprised not to see up there? Is there anything you think would be higher up?
I think in everyone's head, Army of Lake Town was more successful than it was. One GBHL good podium, GBHL 100 good podium, sorry, is not a lot.
Yeah, I'm surprised that this is 2023 only, but I'm surprised that none, because there was one, spoilers, there was one this past weekend. I'm surprised that it wasn't more often, because again, there was a very high penetration of that specific army, because you could spend 330 something points on the Master Alfred and Braga, get nearly just about 40 models, a wonderful might engine and a solid army, and then you could take whatever tools you fancied, even at smaller points, about 600 points, you could still get ally in a hero, ally in Círdan, get an elf banner. It was a nasty combo. So I am a little surprised that that hasn't done better, actually.
Yeah. It is interesting to see that there's quite a few legendary legions on this list, but they're all in the midsection, if that makes sense. So we've got in a row Vanquishers, Defenders, then skip one, Beornings. I think a lot of people have talked about how oppressive some of those lists were. Vanquishers, especially, very oppressive to play against. Beornings, again, Defenders is a very shoot-heavy list.
Yeah.
I think they obviously do have their pitfalls where they beat a lot of lists, but then maybe lose on scenario, which is,
Vanquishers in particular are scenario, like, weak. There are some... So particularly maneuvering and hold objective pools are both, almost all of those are big pitfalls for Vanquishers. Storm of the Camp is probably the best one there for them, because recon is almost an auto lose against a normal army because you have five models.
Yeah.
And divide and conquer is an objective-based scenario, which, again, not fantastic for the vanquishers. And then objective-based scenarios where you have to split up to hold multiple objectives, they just can't do well enough. All your opponent has to do is deploy the objectives as far apart as possible, and the vanquishers are suddenly struggling to, you know, do anything.
Well, I mean,
they'll win. They'll break the army and kill the leader probably, but that's only worth two victory points. So if your opponent is happens to be holding three objectives, you can't win in those scenarios. You can't win in domination.
Yeah,
for example. So it's difficult. They'll never be dominant. I think you'll find in Evil the Legendary Legions will have done better. Yes, particularly, well, I won't go into too much into it now, but I imagine the Dragon Emperor.
Should we have a look and confirm Dave's predictions?
Just before Dave does, I was going to say, shout out to the Defenders of Erebor list. crash list, good player who got it on a GBH 100 podium. I think it was Ben Haslam.
That shout is Ben out. Haslam, yeah.
and yeah, onto the Evil podiums. Whoa! And we see right at the top, with 17 victories, or 17 podiums, rather, Mordor. Nobody's surprised. I bet at least 16 of those have Witch King in them. Probably 17, realistically. 14, we've got Serpent Horde. Again, most of those is through Suladan, who obviously a very good piece. Then we've got a series of Legendary Legions. We've got 8 wins for Host, or 8 podiums for Host of the Dragon Emperor. 8 for Assault upon Helm's Deep. 7 for Assault on Othlorien.
5.
We've got 4 Azog's Hunters, especially given those lower points margins, and allies as well. We've got 3 Azog's Legions. I would assume that those are probably mercenaries. We've got Dark Denizens of Mirkwood. We've got 2 at Angmar. We've got 2 Dark Powers of Dol Guldur, 2 Black Riders, and then a few other factions at the bottom with 1 victory each.
I think the first thing that jumps out at me, well, 2 things. One, obviously, the dominance of kind of Mordor and Serpent Horde, but also just the how much less variation there is in Evil compared to Good. And then
that part Assault. Of that, sorry, go on.
Sorry, and finally, both Assault Legions, who are kind of the 4th and 5th highest podiums, both getting more than the, I think, more than the highest Good armies, have both kind of taken some nerfs.
Yeah, so Good was Lothlorien, Misty Mountain 7, Erebor Reclaimed 6, and then 5s for the Rivendell and Fellowships. I'm sure I'm going to say something that Dave was about to say, but these lists, none of these are from one drops or small war bands. Whereas you look at the Fellowships, you look at the Misty Mountains, with the exception of Mordor and Serpent Horde, most of these lists are functioning 100% on their own. And also, both Mordor and Serpent Horde can function on their own. So I think we're seeing a lot more independence from the Evil factions, perhaps, albeit Suladan and the Witch King having a sordid love affair at the top.
Evil armies, there are fewer Evil factions. I think there's something like 2/3 of the number, maybe even less than that. Compared to Good, so that's a difficult start. But then you have to consider that Legendary Legions, again, there are more good Legendary Legions than Evil ones, so the number of possible good factions is far higher just to start with. I would say that Evil have better all-round factions. No good faction has anything like the versatility of Mordor. Mordor is Swiss Army Knife faction with excellent alliance matrices, which it should be, because basically it's the bad guy faction, and everything in Tolkien is connected, and pretty much all of them, unless we're doing different, you know, talking about Angmar or Azog's Legion and stuff, talking about different time periods, Mordor is basically just the bad guys at any given moment, so they should be able to ally with everything. Serpent Horde, rarely seen solo, so that Far-Harad will have been with Serpent Horde as well, just because taking Far-Harad without taking Suladan is foolish, and most people would know that. Mordor, again, a lot of those will be with Serpent Horde. None of those Dark Denizens of Mirkwood will have been without their accompanying Mordor, though. It's always Mordor plus the Spider Queen. It's never just
I can give you the exact numbers for Mordor's had 0 pure podiums. Serpent Horde had 1 pure podium. Unsurprisingly, Dark Denizens had 0 pure podiums.
Yeah, because it's the Spider Queen list. That's all it is, and she never goes alone.
Oh, you're guilty of one of those, are you? Wait, is that you? Was it your Spider Queen Watcher?
Yeah, I mean that Moria was me as well.
Yeah.
That Moria was a that was one of the Mordor podiums was that plus Mordor plus the Spider Queen, which is
Yeah.
a solid combination that I encourage anyone to try out at very large points because it does everything.
Yeah, Jakob Krochmal makes it work really well with triple caster.
So
Oh,
this all this data is kind of looking retrospectively at the year gone.
yeah.
How do we think we can use this data kind of moving forward? We know that kind of Assault on Helm's Deep, those numbers may go down. Lothlórien, those numbers may go down. Assault on Lothlórien, that is. Looking at good, the only thing that's really been touched is Army of Lake Town. So maybe that will go down, but maybe it's already done well this year. It was a bit of foreshadowing.
I don't think the shooting meta has gone anywhere. If anything, I think it's back with a vengeance. And I think people will continue to realize that Isengard is not Isengard in the traditional sense. That is Jay Achaia attempting to rebuild something incomparably good to Assault upon Helm's Deep, which is a list he had a lot of success with last year. As you can see, several people had a lot of success with it. It's a very powerful list. But now that the ballistas don't reroll every shot, they only reroll ones and scatter, it's now arguable that you might have more success, which, spoilers, he has done, running pure Isengard and bringing in characters like Braskew and Lurtz and even allying the Witch King in at higher points, get some Black Numenoreans just to keep things on the cutting edge. Because ultimately, what he's doing is he's building shooting lists. Apart from one time where he at 1,000 when he won the tournament with a super list including Gwalior and some Minas Tirith and some various elf factions. I think he had Galadriel and Legolas, Gwalior, Boromir. He's exclusively used heavy crossbow lists when he's done well. So Isengard or Assault upon Helm's Deep or Isengard allies have been the core of what he used last year, and I think that is the success of that. Indicates that shooting is maybe here to stay, and just because Assault upon Helm's Deep and Assault on Lothlórien have been nerfed doesn't mean that building powerful shooting lists isn't a great way to succeed. And that may lead to a cascade effect, bringing in anti-shooting and so on, because that's how these things always go. If shooting becomes too prevalent, people start preparing for it a lot more. And I think the tail end of last year's meta was heavily influenced by the nerfs to Assault upon Helm's Deep and Assault on Lothlórien in August, even though they actually weren't touched that much. That effect meant that people were less inclined to take them, which meant other people were less inclined to take anti-shooting, which meant that suddenly someone like Jay was able to do well running heavy shooting lists again because he's read the meta correctly and thought that people are less prioritizing Brying Light, they're less prioritizing the Shadow Lord or anti-shooting measures. Because the biggest offenders got nerfed, even though it wasn't actually much more than a bit of a love tap in terms of power drop.
I think you also mentioned there, kind of specifically with crossbows. Crossbows are strength four, and that strength four is quite important in the meta at the moment and will likely be very important kind of going forward into the new year. Should we have a look at combined kind of 100 and 90s? We know not every tournament's a super competitive 90.
Yeah,
Is
there's
there
a
anything?
very interesting one I'm looking forward to looking at on this next slide.
So this slide is a little bit busy, but it's the best way of kind of showing the detail. I'll let Stephen run through it, but if anyone wants to kind of pause the video here and kind of have a bit more of a detailed look, and then comment down below what you think of
Yeah, we're not actually
it.
in a perfect order here. I'll just do a brief summary of kind of the top five or so. We've got Mordor on what looks like 24. We've got Serpent Horde on 21. We've got Minas Tirith. Shout out people like Dave Clubley, although I'm not sure it's actually him. Minas Tirith on 17. We've got Rivendell on 14. That's just a lot of Cairns and Glorfindels. Don't get excited. And then we've got Assault on Lothlórien on 13th. And then we've got things like Host of Dragon Emperor, Angmar. We've got some Lothlórien loitering around the 12 marks. And then Erebor Reclaimed and the Fellowship in 10th, with 10. And then there's a bunch of other factions under 9. I'm not going to waste 5 minutes talking about those as well. Firstly, Minas Tirith at 90s, hashtag new meta. Because it looks like it's won or podiumed, is that 17 minus 4, so 13 times. That's solid. Same with Angmar, actually, on 12, so 10 90 podiums. That's pretty cheeky. I think the addition of the 90s is a reflection a lot more of slightly less competitive tournaments, and I say slightly less because they are only slightly less competitive, where people can take the additional style, the flair that they want, and it works. Like I say, the Minas Tirith, suddenly we've got a resurgence of Far-Harad in there at 7 victories, which, you know, that's probably 2 or 3 players who really enjoy the lists and really make them work, which is lovely to see, because I think that's one of the intentions for 90s, is it's still competitive, but you can hopefully dust off your army, which you've used maybe 100 times, and do really well with it and not just get punked by the meta.
Yeah. There are some things that I think caveat this a little, which is, for example, you were saying about certain players have influenced this a lot. I think it's worth mentioning that, unlike hundreds, 90s are more likely to be one-day events. You're more likely to have a lot of them over the course of the year. There were a lot, particularly in the south, so southeast and southwest, and in Scotland, there were a lot of 90s relative to certain other regions. So you can feel the influence of certain players more.
It's the Dan Hawkins position, the Southwest 90. I think he won about 15 of those this year, at least.
He won 3, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, he won
him 3. And Dewey Evans put a lot of time into 90s in the Southwest and did pretty well. I would be surprised if none of those for Harad were Dewey. In fact, I remember he got a podium at the Hampshire GT. That was 100, but that would have been the for Harad 100.
Yeah, I believe he Dewey won a Worcester tournament. I think it was a 90.
Yeah.
It might have been an 80. I might have misremembered. But I remember him winning the Rings of Power Sauron sword, I believe.
Very nice.
For it. So,
I would say that this really just demonstrates that people like certain armies, but acknowledge that they're not that strong. The biggest ones there are clearly Angmar, Minas Tirith, and Far-Harad. Armies that just have no presence, or Numenor is pretty notable there as well. Armies that have very little relative presence in GBHL 100s, but people use a lot. Shout out to the Fiefdoms, Theodred's Guard, Helm's Guard, and the Wanderers in the Wild. Wanderers in the Wild, interesting. That would be presumably Tom Bombadil,
it might be Barlam and Butterbeer being chucked into places.
Yeah, maybe. But yeah, Fiefdoms and Theodred's Guard have 4 podiums each at 90s and none in 100s. So that's pretty telling.
That some mad lad, or mad person, sorry, has gone out and taken Wolves of Isengard to a GBHL 90 podium, which I love.
Mad folk.
That list is objectively terrible. If you have ever lost to that list, let's say in a competitive tournament, and you've taken a very meta list, like, I don't know, some legendary legion, and you lose to Wolves of Isengard, check yourself, okay?
Right. That may have been the Swindon 90 where our boy John O'Brien lost to Wolves of Isengard.
Oh, did he? I'm going to very quickly go check that. you guys carry on.
Cool. So I think that'll probably take us to the end of the stats section. Yeah. Now we'll start looking at kind of this weekend's events. We had 2 this weekend. The first one took us across the sea to Bangor in Northern Ireland. It was the Battle of Numerous Tears, organised by Zenith Sproul. Sean Sproul. 715 points, 6 games. The event had a bit of a quirk. It had the Treasure Seeker special rules. So every army got a free treasure seeker represented by a Moria Goblin captain with some extra might and a special fate rule. And then there was, across the board in each game, there were various relics that players could collect to give their treasure seeker extra rules. Most sporting at this event was won by a chap called Gareth Mansfield, who I've never had the pleasure to play, but congratulations on winning that one. And then Best Painted was won by Patrick McCormick, who also won Best Display Board, and his Gondor and Fiefdom's Army is shown on the screen here. There were a variety of other hobby awards, which you can kind of find and see all the fantastic kind of hobby work on offer on the Facebook page for the event that can be reached through the GBHL Facebook group.
I've been to an event. This was hosted at Exploding Dice, which is a nice little gaming club in Bangor, Northern Ireland. I went over there for a GBHL 100 at the end of last year, and it's a lovely little venue that was hosted by Connor Glover, who, shout out Connor, he runs the Wikis of Mirkwood, or he's involved with the Wikis of Mirkwood. I'm not sure if he runs it or if he's just a bit heavily involved, but that YouTube situation is involving him, and they do good content, so you should check them out if you like listening to Northern Irish people talk about this game and occasionally other games as well.
Speaking of other content creators, looking at the podium, third place was taken by the little drummer boy himself, Mr. Harry Parkhill. So just to kind of talk through his list, the first warband had Imrahil mounted with a lance, 10 men-at-arms of Dol Amroth, and 2 clansmen. The second warband was led by Gandalf the White on Shadowfax, and that's not a typo. Gandalf actually got a podium at an event. 9 Minas Tirith warriors with shield and spear, 1 Minas Tirith warrior with just a shield, and 1 knight of Minas Tirith. And the final warband was rounded out, led by Madril, 3 warriors of Minas Tirith with bow, 3 rangers with spear. In total, the list had 6 bow, 9 might, breaking at 15 models remaining and quartering at 7. What do we think of this list, team?
It's funny that you should call out Gandalf the White as never been podiuming, because the last time I was in that venue, an all-hero list involving Gandalf the White literally came second, piloted by the excellent Jakob Krokmal.
That's put me in my place.
Yes, it has. But, you know, I mean, Gandalf the White is a very expensive model, but he does offer a very unique combination of effects that nothing else does. I think this is a very fluffy list. I wouldn't say it's particularly strong in any one way. I think it's, if anything, it's actually quite a, I wouldn't say a weak list, but it's definitely not overly powerful. But it's a fun list. Like, everything in that list works well together. You're really just setting up a shield wall of Warriors of Minas Tirith, plonking some men-at-arms behind them with Imrahil, doing a lot of work. Madril just really ties the room together, as he always does. Doesn't have much in the way of shooting. He even has Warriors of Minas Tirith with bow, which is wonderfully quaint and not optimal in the slightest, but I do enjoy to see them on the tabletop.
It continues the trend for what we saw in the stats of Minas Tirith doing well at kind of 90 point events.
And fiefdoms as well.
And fiefdoms.
Yeah.
So, taking us through to second place, we've got Conor Kerr, continuing the infamous Mordor Serpent Horde alliance, but he's got a really quite different spin on it. So I'll run through that now for our audio listeners. He's got 48 models, 17 bows. The leader is the Golden King of Abrakan. He's got 9 fatties, whose correct name I can't remember.
African Merchant Guard.
Yeah.
Fatties. 5 warriors with bow and spears. The next warband is led by Harad Taskmaster. 10 more warriors with bow and spear, and 2 raiders with bow and spear. Next up, he's got a Hasharin leading 9 Watchers of Karna with twin blades and his Treasure Seeker. Finally, he's got a Ring Wraith, kind of a bit on the budget side, 2 Might, 8 Will, 1 Fate, leading 8 Black Numenoreans. Rounding out the list, what do we think of this one?
Yep. I like it. I like it. He's not gone for heavy, well, it's not gone anything remotely meta, but using a Ring Wraith and the Golden King together makes a lot of sense because of how the Golden King special rule works, which allows him to spend his 6 will to affect enemy courage tests, which obviously if you have a Ring Wraith that also affects their courage test, which means that if your opponent's leader rolls some dice and badly, and you can then make them run away quite easily with a Golden King. Ebon King is a nice profile, but when compared to other things that are a little stronger, like for example Suledan, he feels a bit strange. Like he doesn't have strike, he's only 5/4, but he does have 4 attacks, plus 1 to wound.
Yeah.
But also he has a banner, but it's just a banner, it's not a 6-inch banner. You know, there's a lot of issues with him. In fact, his base, or bases, I should say, because technically he has 2, are confusing in the way they actually work in the game.
Whether that regularly means... become trapped by maybe one model against a piece of terrain.
Yep. I mean, he can trap models by himself quite effectively, but also, yeah it's a double-edged sword. But it is an interesting model, interesting profile. Definitely better than it maybe seems like it could be. But at the same time, the problem it has is it sits next to Suledan in an army list, and he is extremely good value.
And he's more expensive than Suledan.
The Golden King is, yeah. And he doesn't have that cavalry power. So it's unfortunate.
But shout out to Will Champion, who recommends him as an undervalued hero. If you haven't checked out Will Champion's Patreon, go check it out.
Clearly, Connor has hit on something with that. I like the Hasharin. I don't think Hasharins are very good, but they're kind of cool profiles. They're non-named strikers with 1 might, 3 attacks, rerolls to wound. They're interesting. You've got throwing daggers, but there are a lot of points, and 1 might for an 80-point hero feels unfortunate. However, he's clearly going for something unique, and he's succeeded. He's come second, and he came up with a unique list that's obviously done pretty well. So good job, Connor.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so continuing the slightly off meta trend that rounds us out with our first place list, we've got Ivan Sheehan using the Army of Dale Legendary Legion, bringing 45 models. The first warband is led by King Brand, 10 Knights of Dale, a Warrior of Dale with spear and banner, 5 Warriors of Dale with spear and Escaroth bow, and Indiana Jones, which is his treasure seeker. His second warband is led by Prince Bard, 5 more Knights of Dale, 5 Warriors of Dale with spear and shield, and 5 Warriors of Dale with spear and Escaroth bow. The third warband, rounding things out, is a Captain of Dale with a bow, 2 Knights of Dale, 5 Warriors of Dale with spear and shield, and finally 4 Warriors of Dale with spear and Escaroth bow. One thing that might be really useful is to, if anyone knows off the top of their head, just to talk about what sort of bonuses the Legendary Legion gets, because I'm not quite sure myself.
So Dale's army bonus in general is if you run it pure or in a Green Alliance, it gets plus 1 to shoot value, which means their archers, so Escaroth bows are the same as elf bows, so they're strength 3, and their archers get up to a 3+ shoot value in the pure list. That is also in the case of the Legendary Legion. This Legendary Legion also has the special rule where everyone in the list gets Swarm Protector while Brand is alive, which is essentially the same as like the Theodred's Guard. Even he himself gets it, which is a little bit strange, but basically the whole army is fearless as long as Brand is alive, which is a nice rule. It's nothing fantastic, but if you're going to run pure Dale and you didn't plan on running Geryon, like, you might as well take this because you're going to run Brand if you're not running Geryon.
And it means when you come up against those nasty Mordor Sully lists, you charge.
Yeah. Dale isn't like overly powerful, but it definitely is not. It's not weak either. As a pure list, it doesn't have any tricks. It's just we shoot good. The closest thing to the Dale army list has to a trick is Geryon's Great Bow, which is essentially the same at shooting output as Bard, but on a cheaper hero, a less good hero in other ways, but he can do the same thing that Bard can. But yeah, it's good. You get to decent numbers. Knights of Dale get plus 1 to wound when you charge them, which is pretty cool. That's a slightly strange dynamic because it means you maybe don't want to charge them as much while they shoot at you. But other than that, it's basically just a mostly fight 4. Some of that will be D6, but mostly a lot of it is D5 and D4 as well. The heroes are not fabulous. They don't get fight 6, but they're not terrible. It's a middling army list that Ivan is a top player, so he's done well with it. Work props to him.
It has that good shooting that we mentioned, kind of.
Yes.
The equivalent of kind of 14 elf bows plus the Escaroth bow and the captain.
The thing is, 15 bow shots isn't that many at 17, so 715 points. Like, it's good. It's probably more elf bows than you would get if you ran elves, unless you ran pure Rivendell knights. But it's like, it's a good amount of shooting. It's not fabulous. The thing that really makes it work is it's attached to a large body of a sort of defensive unit.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, this is a solid battle line, but it's not a really powerful one. Like, this battle line would get run over by an equivalent Arnor list, for example. Like, if you had to just have a fight,
yeah,
an Arnor, that Arnor list would have that, more models to start with, and it would have Melbeth and
D6.
Yeah, I mean, there is D6 in there. The Knights of Dale, there's 15 D6 models, but there, D6 but
all the way through.
Yeah, and Melbeth as well. So, for example, like, I mean, that's a, you know, Arnor is a powerful battle line, especially at 700. It's very powerful. But what I'm saying is, this is an okay battle line, but it's not a top battle line. It wouldn't favor that well into actually good, really strong battle lines.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's a cool list. It's unique, and the models are absolutely fantastic. All of them are really, really nice. And that's one of the main appeals of running Dale, is their models are really, really good looking.
Once you get them fully painted on the table, I know Josh Ballard is finishing his off, and I can't wait to see them finished. But yeah, really dynamic poses, face detail. We're looking at it on the actual screen in front of us. If you're listening, go look up the Dale line.
Yeah.
Gorgeous models, as
they're all good. Yeah, very nice.
Fabulous mustache and that Knight of Dale on the right.
Yeah, they've all got tashes, or a lot of them do.
Yeah, the Viltrumites. Shall we move on to the next part?
Let's go.
This was our second tournament of the weekend. Into the West, ran by Matt King, who runs Dragon Gaming. In kind of the archetypal Into the West fashion, it was 450 points, 7 rounds. Unfortunately, the players listed for most sporting and best painted there are incorrect. That's a copy and paste error from the previous slide.
Whoops.
Which maybe we'll correct in post. But all of the hobby awards and photos of a lot of the really fabulous armies that were on display, and especially some of the display boards. There was a light up Minas Morgul display board that was fantastic, will be kind of posted on the event page by Mr. King.
Yeah, hopefully we'll remember to link the Instagram link to that display board, because especially that Minas Morgul, it is Minas Morgul.
I think it's fair to say I can consider myself a display board connoisseur, and that Minas Morgul was absolutely stunning. It was really, really special. The one hobby award that I did manage to include in the PowerPoint is this kind of fantastic Easterling army splashing in a great beast of Gorgoroth, kind of really heavily converted. Even just the Howler that is on the picture and will hopefully as well be up on Facebook is kind of converted to match kind of the Dragon Emperor palanquin. Really stunning army.
Yeah. It's just a beautiful thing. I mean, he's got a converted Amdur there as well. He's converted an Amdur out of the Mount of Dragon Knight using some sort of Easterling glaive, and it looks fantastic. The orc, what I believe are the orc dismounts from the Great Beast, are represented by converted Warriors of Khand with Easterling helmets. They just look fantastic. Every acolyte there has been green stuff to have robes on, so there's no buff arms on display. Clearly, he wasn't a fan of those. It's just a gorgeous army, just beautiful stuff.
Every single model has had so much work put into it.
Yeah.
Like, there's no detail where he hasn't said, actually, I prefer it like this, so I'm going to make it so.
Even they've even attached like an Easterling pike tip looking thing to the horn of the Great Beast, which is just a lovely touch. So he's done a fantastic job there. 100% props. Wonderful stuff.
Apologies to audio listeners, but please do go check out the pictures. It's worth the 2 minutes of your day to go and have a look.
And the name is something that we tried to confirm before we started, but unfortunately we don't have. But fantastic. Fantastic.
Another thing to add in editing. Yes, hopefully it's on the screen.
Yeah. Sorry, Spotify.
Yeah. Somewhere. So moving into the gaming side of things, the TO Matt did a fantastic job kind of giving us a head start with some statistics. So this is the army breakdown of kind of what appeared and what people were bringing to the event. And it's all covered kind of in a bit more detail than we'll talk about here in the Golems Gamers pre-tournament breakdown videos that they put out. Yeah. Some of the standout factions, we've kind of got 8 Azog Hunter armies, 7 Mordor armies, 7 Minas Tiriths, 5 Morias as one of the kind of top factions, which is slightly surprising. 6 Riders of Theoden. Again, probably wouldn't expect that much. There are quite a lot when you combine the various flavors of alliances, Lake Towns, a few survivors, a few armies. And we've got 2 pure Army of Lake Towns and 4 Army of Lake Town Thorin's companies.
I was going to say Army of Lake Town definitely didn't have 2 players, but I didn't realize they've got Army of Lake Town or Thorin's company as a separate list here. That makes sense.
I think what's quite obvious here, and I'm going to jump on this point because I don't have much an answer to say, is that any list which can put out 30 to 40 numbers, you'll see it on there. So Mordor, I think there were a few lists which were pushing 30. Azog's Hunters, there were a few between 35 and 40s. Minas Tirith can just about make it. Obviously, the Lake Town, there was a lot of Lake Town, a few survivors lists. Dave had one of them. I had an Army of Lake Town list with allies. Again, this was just pushing good numbers at 450 points. Because if you look at the scenarios, and this was just a 7-game one where each pool would be used once and then the last game would repeat a pool, but not repeat a scenario. If you look at the match play guide, having numbers favors you in... I suppose 15 or 16 of the available scenarios. So at 450, good might, good numbers, Army of Lake Town, Azog's Hunters. That's the kind of stuff we'd expect to see.
Is there anything that you guys would have expected to see in higher numbers present at the event?
Not really. That's pretty much bang on what I would expect.
Yeah, I was more surprised to see 6 lots of Beornings. I understand that some people say that 400 or 450 is a good points mark for it because you don't weaken your break point by adding too many or by not adding enough bay awnings because obviously you have 2 and then 2 bears, so you still have to kill a bear to break them. But again, the numbers feels like it's not weak enough, not strong enough. But
it's chancing it. It's chancing the fact that you'll get the scenarios that it can handle, which, to be fair, it did. Apart from Recon, most of the scenarios were very winnable for Beornings, with the 4 model version. Yeah. You know, Caption Control is the best one from that pool for them. Contest of Champions is the best one from that pool. Heirlooms is the best one from that pool. It was definitely set up for Beornings, even though they couldn't have known that. It's just a swing list. They're hoping for good scenarios because Beornings are extremely hard to deal with at 450 if you don't happen to bring a Batswarm or a Ringbearer, which there actually were quite a few Bilbos kicking around.
But it is nice to see, again, quite a big variety of lists. I know we're looking at 122 players worth of lists, but seeing stuff like Ruffians, Khand, obviously that was Sam Grattan of Golems Gamers. We're seeing Defenders of Helm's Deep. I believe that was Ed Ball. We've got Grey
and Bert.
And Bert?
Bert had it as well.
There's only one on the sheet, which might be a mistake from a lack of submission. I think there were a few late submissions, maybe.
Well, John definitely got bodied by Bert's.
Spoilers to us going that. Through. Spoilers to us going through our tournament briefly.
Yeah. But yeah, no, good. Good list, a good variation of armies. And as we say, this is what we would expect going into it, I would say.
Should we talk briefly about how we got on at the tournament and what we took? And probably is what's more useful is why we took what we did rather than kind of whether the matches went our way or not.
As long as we keep it brief. Yeah. I took I took the other one, Survivors of Erebor. No, I think Erebor Reclaimed and Survivors of Lake Town, which was essentially Thorin, King of the Man on a goat, leading 17 dwarves and a Lake Town captain leading 11 militia, most of whom had spears. Took 4 bows just because you want a few bows. Mostly I just wanted the numbers. I wanted the march. I wanted to let Thorin do his thing because he's a very undercosted hero, especially at 450. And essentially my games went well until either one or two things happened. My opponent picked up the heirloom first try across the board from my entire army, which in 90-minute games is a very bad thing to happen because you just do not have the time to retrieve it. Even though he very obligingly played probably faster than he wanted to because he could tell that I was a little concerned about the time, which is nice of him. It didn't matter because, again, that setup is a very poor way to start the game. And my other loss was essentially came down to the fact that my Thorin didn't perform, which that's the list. If the Thorin doesn't perform, you didn't bring an army, basically.
John, how did you get on and what did you take?
I took Goblin Town, the King, Gollum, a captain and a scribe. I think the scribe gives you an awful lot at 450, kind of the relative kind of extra points you get is higher the lower the points value you go. I had a pretty good weekend, went 5-2. My losses were to Dave himself, got farmed again. Something I got used to quite a bit last year. And then also to Bert Leach, who, as we mentioned, was using Defenders of Helm's Deep, and Bert played it fantastically. He had gambling to give him infinite might and was just calling moves every time once I was out of might and just kiting me, moving 6 inches back, throwing spear. I just couldn't keep up with my goblins and lost the attrition war.
Very entertaining way to play the game. Shout out Bert Leach. Love you, really.
It was a fantastic game.
I also went 5-2, completing the 5-2 trifecta. I took Army of Lake Town and Thorin's Company, specifically Bilbo and Bomber. Took them because I thought they'll be good at 450. They were good at 450. Lost contest to John because he had the Goblin King. thumbs up the game. And lost a mirror matchup to the lovely Michael Bradford last game of day two. I just kind of wanted to chill. And he had the better version because his was pure Lake Town. So I just chilled. And I thought I was pretty happy with 5-2, considering I'd literally never used the list before. It plays itself, people. It plays itself.
Your army looked lovely as well, Stephen.
Oh, yeah. I also was using John's army and John's display board, which won me second display board. Shall we move on?
I would say it's pretty telling that people's expectations play into how they feel, because we all got very, very similar results. We all went 5-2, but I think we all felt different about how the tournament went. I think that's a good illustration of personal expectations and also how one, you know, approaches tournaments in general.
Yeah, I mean, looking back on it, I could have probably played to beat Mr. Bradford because he was trying for a secret objective, which meant that he only shot one bow shot in turn one, and if I just had a shooting wall with him, it was possible. I would have been happier to go 6-1, but also it meant it was a nice chill game, a nice chill way to end the day. Didn't have to think too hard, and then got home and had a good night's sleep.
Two of our teammates went as well. Jordan took Hunter Orcs, kind of his first foray into using them. Mm-hmm. I think, did he go 4-3?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, 4-3, kind of your first time using an army. Pretty good, trying to move away from tentacling people. And then Elliot cracked out his freshly kind of off the painting table Khazad Dûm, which looked lovely. I mean, he had a pretty rough day one with some rough missions and rough matchups, but brought it back day two, finished 3-4.
Yeah, much better to lose four the first day and win three at the second day than have a happy day one and a miserable day two. Shall we talk about the winning army lists?
Yeah, that's the real reason people are here, not to listen to what we didn't win with. So in third place, we've got Sean Creed. Sean took a good and evil army this weekend, and you can see kind of some pictures if you're watching along with us. His stunning kind of Mumak war leader made up his evil force, the Grand Army of the South. He had the Mumak war leader, two Haradrim warriors with bow and poison arrows, three Haradrim warriors and two Mahud warriors with blowpipe and poison darts. And that's the entire 9 model list. Whereas on his good side, he went with a bit more of a horde. He's got pure Army of Lake Town, not messing around with Thorin's company, but he hasn't gone the full Horde version. He's taken the Master of Lake Town, 4 Lake Town Guard with bow, 5 Lake Town Guard with spear, 3 Lake Town Guard without extra equipment. He's got Alfred the Counselor, 4 Lake Town Guard with bow, 4 Lake Town Guard with spear, 3 Lake Town Guard without extra equipment. And finally, he's got Bard on horse wearing his armor. He's got Bard's daughters, Sigrid and Tilda, and that same warband build, 4 Lake Town Guard with bow, 4 Lake Town Guard with spear, and 3 Lake Town Guard without any extra equipment.
I think it's pretty exciting and interesting that the Lake Town army that actually made the podium was the one that was not on anyone's mind as the meta version of that, which is to say taking Bard, because Bard is extremely expensive when you factor in taking the daughters and the armor and the horse. He's 180 points, and when you're not getting his benefits in the survivor's army list, he's crucial and he gives a lot of benefits to the army. In the Army of Lake Town, he doesn't give any benefits, and in fact he actually means that there's anti-synergy with Braga, which he didn't take. So having, not only has he got Army of Lake Town with a very, very expensive Bard, he's also not got any march, which in Army of Lake Town is very funny, because that's like the thing that army does better than anything is march for days. So massive respect to Sean for pulling this one off. That's a very shooty version. Bard is extremely shooty, but because he's got a smaller version, because he's got 180 point hero in there, he only actually has, 12 regular bowmen. So he's actually missing out on, you know, if you run that pure without Bard and you run Braga and a captain, you can get 17 bows. So he's done well. It's very cool to see that, actually. Well done, Sean.
I think also, so this Army of Lake Town army / his Survivor's Army has won multiple Best Painting Awards. It's really nice to see him not only have such stunning armies, but also be clearly very good at the game with his lists. So shout out for being an all-round hobby champ. Genius. Yeah,
also, side note, but this tournament has an all-round little team event where up to 5 players can enter, and then basically it takes a total of their score in all the factions. So how you do in the gaming, how you place, as well as how many votes and stuff you get on the hobby. And I don't think it's a coincidence that Sean's team won this year and last year. And I don't remember he won last year because he was on my team and I won last year.
Ooh. Are you saying it's a fix?
No, I'm saying Sean is a cheat code in this thing, because he's a good gamer, will place well, and also all of his armies look amazing.
And he's also nice to play against as well, so he gets most sporting votes.
Oh, I wouldn't go that far.
I think he's won a most sporting before.
I think he has. Yeah, he's a good. He's an all round hobby champion. Yeah. Like John Partridge.
Very kind, Dave. I've never podiumed. Oh no, I have come third at 100.
I was gonna say you came third at 100 and won best painted at the same tournament, mate. How are you not remembering this? You also got most sporting while playing one of the most unpleasant to play against army lists in the entire game. So own it, my friend.
I think just diverting back to the topic at hand, that the fact that this man won games with the Memoch War Leader as well.
He won a game with the Memoch War Leader.
Oh, was it only one game?
He only played it once, yeah. He played 6 games with his good army and one game with the Memoch.
Oh, okay.
However, he did beat a Riders of Theoden with the Memoch, which is very impressive, because that's not an easy at recon, I should add. That's not an easy matchup.
Interesting.
Yes.
I have questions, but they will.
Well, I'll answer you after the recording's over.
So, moving on to our second place list, I'm sure it's a name we'll see more often as we continue looking at tournaments throughout the year. It's Mr. Ali King, the man formerly known as the GBHL League Commissioner.
Champion as well.
Coordinator, but yeah.
Yes. We'll add a little correcting John counter in the corner for all the mistakes I made. Can be the theme. So Ali's good list is Theodred's Guard Legendary Legion. Leading it is their namesake, Theodred, on horse with a shield. He's got 2 Warriors of Rohan with throwing spears, 1 Warrior of Rohan with banner and throwing spears, 5 Royal Guard with throwing spears, 1 Mounted Royal Guard with throwing spear, and 5 Rohan Outriders, who I believe as stock don't come mounted, but I stand to be corrected. Then in his second warband, he's got a Captain of Rohan on horse and shield, 2 more warriors with throwing spear and shield, 5 royal guard with throwing spears, 1 royal guard with horse and throwing spears, and 4 more outriders for a total of 28 models and 9 bows.
Not to count the throwing spears.
Not including throwing spears. Ali's evil army is the army of Dunland. He's going for a bit of a theme here. Led by Thrydan Wolfsbane, 6 Dunlending warriors with shield, 1 Dunlending warrior with banner and a bow, 1 wild man of Dunland, 2 Dunlending horsemen, 4 Dunlending huskarls, and 1 Crabane. His second warband is led by the Dunlending chieftain, who swapped his axe, his sword for an axe and a shield. 4 more Dunlending warriors, 1 wild man of Dunland with two-handed weapon, 2 Dunlending horsemen, 4 Dunlending huskarls, and 1 more Crabane for a total of 29 models with a single bow and 5 might.
I hear those Crabane have insane mobility, like absolutely wild mobility.
No, if anyone hasn't heard the Golems Gamers again in their Into the West preview, talking and debating for hours about the mobility from a single Crabane, it's worth a watch.
Listen, I'm not saying that that mobility is the best thing in the game and will totally be tournament winning, but spoilers, it might be that. Anyway, this is a solid list. Army of Dunland is fine. It's kind of powerful. 6-inch banners, always good, as we know. This just is interesting because it's kind of a little bit over full, if it makes sense. Like a 450 list that has 4 cav and 2 Crabane, you look at that and you think, wow, that's a lot of mobility. That's more than you would normally get. And the reason for that is, of course, the warband space. You can't have more because you can't fit another hero and actually get more models unless you went very heavy on wild men. And obviously that's not what he's gone for. This is a pretty cool list. The Dunlending Warcry is pretty good. Thrydan can once per game 12-inch bubble of giving every Dunlending in the list, so not the Crabane but everything else, plus 1 to wound for a turn, which obviously is depending on you winning fights, but if you do win fights, it's painful. It does a lot of damage. Dunland also is majoritively strength 4, which is quite cool, and they all have axes, which means that there's a lot of strength 4 and 5, which actually means this is a very killy list, despite the fact that it doesn't have loads of models, doesn't have bows.
It's also very good at dying, because if you decide you want a two-handed piercing strike everywhere,
there's a lot of ability to do
there's
that.
There's a lot of ability to do that.
Yeah, which is nice. Just to switch to talking about his good list, Theodred's Guard. This is a slightly different version to the Theodred's Guard. He has won Into the West before with Theodred's Guard, and that time he used Elfhelm and Theodred as his two heroes. This time he's opted for a captain, and I think we talked about this before, and he felt that in the inevitability that there would be more shooting around, he wanted the ability to move at a higher speed, and he valued that higher than the sort of semi-trickery that Elfhelm offers, and I think I agree with him on that. This time he also opted for a heavier presence of outriders. He's got maxed outriders rather than the sort of smattering he had last time, which I think was 4, maybe 6. So he's opted for less throwing spears, more outriders, and I think it paid off for him because he did well. 9. So yeah, outriders, John, are essentially fight 3 rangers with a special rule that means they can benefit from stand fast from a hero no matter how far away they are, as long as they have line of sight. And they can be optionally mounted for 5 points, but they're not mounted by default. They come on for 8 points, 3 plus shoot value. They're pretty good. They're good enough that you basically would never run Warriors of Rohan with bow unless your TO was not going to allow conversions, because they're just better. You pay 1 point to get an extra fight shoot value, which going from 4 plus to 3 plus, you would pay that all day, every day. No questions asked.
And you get the board wide stand fast thing,
which is just gravy, really. That's a strong list. Theodred himself can be a little bit of a liability, but you really don't need him. He's there to be the thing that you need to take for the list. He's there to smash lines late into the game when you have an opportunity. He's not there to be your main man. He's there to allow you to take a fearless army with 15 plus throwing spears and 9 bows, you know? D6 front line. It doesn't have the Helmingus because that would have required him to take Grimbold, and I think he thought the captain was a better choice, which I agree. But yeah, I think it's a nice little paired list. Those two go well together thematically, and he pilots them well, as you can tell, because he came second. He went 6-1. I know that much.
And that leads us through to first place. So repeating his performance last year, I don't know if that's been done before, is Jay Acharya.
With lovely a salt chap. On Helms. Oh, wait.
Oh, Mum, can we have a salt on Helms Deep? No, we have a salt on Helms Deep at home.
What does that have, John?
It has a total of 26 models, three warbands. In the first warband, we've got Lurts, leading four Uruk-hai warriors with crossbow, six Uruk-hai warriors with pike, and the extremely mobile Crebane. In the second warband, we've got Vrasku, four more Uruk-hai warriors with crossbow, six Uruk-hai warriors with pikes. And rounding out the third warband, we have an Uruk-hai siege veteran, of course, leading an Isengard assault ballista. For a total of 11 bows, there should be a bit of an asterisk there because it does have kind of other ranged weaponry and seven might.
Doesn't technically have 11 bows. What it has is it has eight crossbow warriors. It has Lurts with a Uruk-hai bow on him, and it has Vrasku with a two-shot crossbow. So that's sort of 11 shots. So 10 crossbow shots. And then it also has a ballista. So last year he won with a similar kind of list. He had a two captain version. So he had the leader, and then he had a captain with a crossbow. He might even have given his leader a crossbow because he was trying to maximize the numbers.
He did, yes.
And then he had about nine crossbows. So he had similar crossbows last year. He had more models. He had 29, I think it was. He doesn't take a banner because he correctly knows that this list is all about shooting. And in any scenarios where there are banner points, sitting back and shooting is beneficial. So, for example, to the death or destroy the supplies, you know, your opponent can't really sit back with their banner because you'll be like, okay, I will spend many turns shooting you with my, you know, 10 crossbow shots and my assault ballista. And, you know, without combat, there'll be too many turns. You'll just get shot to pieces while he leisurely walks up the board and destroys your supplies, you know, with his Crebane. And the heirlooms is heirlooms. So heirlooms is never going to come down to the banner points in most games. There's just too much going on.
Is Lurts, he hasn't given him a shield.
I presume he has. It's for free. So he may have just not written it down on the list. People often don't, but
there's no reason to not.
There's no reason to not take the shield on Lurts. Lurts and a Vrasku is better than the Uruk-hai leader and another captain, though. Both of those are slightly more effective heroes, and there's more might on the board. So I'm not surprised that he did exactly the same as last year, which is six wins and a draw.
Yeah.
Well done, Jay. Stop using crossbow spam armies. I hate them, but also they're good. I'm not going to deny that.
Yeah, well done, Jay.
Yeah, good job.
So that brings us towards the end of our inaugural podcast episode. Before we touch on kind of the viewer questions that people have submitted through Discord and Facebook, what's the next kind of big tournament in the UK scene in the GBHL? What's our next 100?
The next GBHL 100 is on the 3rd and 4th of February, and it is the 7th City Grand Prix hosted by the incomparable world champion. I think it's fully sold out, unfortunately, but there is a relatively short reserve list, so get on that if you're keen. It might be some last minute dropouts.
600 points, isn't it?
600 points, unique-ish format where there's a four game Swiss ranked, and then the top eight are cut off into a knockout format, and then every 16 players below are cut off into separate little Swiss brackets, and there will be prizes of very nice prizes, actually, a lot of them separated out between the lower pods, and everyone's playing for something very exciting. Even to the very bottom of the tournament day one, you can still be playing for something day two, which is very cool. Cool idea. He's got a massive prize pot. He's put a lot of effort into high level prize support, including store credit. I think last year the top prize was a Smaug or equivalent store credit, which is very cool. So get along if you can. If you've already got a ticket, I'll see you there on the top tables.
He also, Will is one of the best, if not the best, TO in the country.
He's one of my favorite TOs for sure. Yeah,
he's very good at what he does, runs a great event. There's always food, there's always organized socials. He's very fair with his rulings. Just an all-round great guy. It looks like there's six people on reserves, so if you want to go, it's worth hopping on the reserve list. We're all going.
What are some of the things that our viewers and listeners do you think could expect to see kind of on the podiums and the top lists to prepare for when building their armies and deciding what to take?
If there are John Partridges around, that is to say Meta Chasers, people who will have looked for last year's podiums will have spotted that Hunter Orcs with Goblin Mercenary allies go extremely well into 600 points. It's not a coincidence that I mentioned that, because you are holding a Yasnag in your hand right now.
Arnor at 600?
Ready to be painted.
Arnor at 600 is a possibility.
They're solid. I wouldn't say they're top. I think 600 is an awkward points level because they go so well at 550, but then at 600 you have to add a captain and it doesn't actually make them a lot better, but it's still good. Very, very strong list, just not as powerful as it is at 650, 700. I think Goblin Town are good at 600. You get 70 plus models. That's what Jakob got third with last year. Shout out Kirith Ungol, which is what I used to come second last year. They go well at 600, although that is less of a power list. Ugluk Scouts is good at 600. You get 48 models, 17 odd bows. Very powerful list. Lots of plus one to wound, except for the fact your heroes are kind of crap. But that's kind of the point of that list. You spam.
Are we unlikely to see Witch King Sully at 600? It doesn't quite have the teeth, does it? You have to fill a warband of
warriors. Disgusting Harad warband. Yeah. Which is not bad, by the way. Harad are good. It's just that's not really the strength of that list, I would say. You can definitely do more to Harad. I like the look of something like a Shadowlord Gorbag Zul'adan combo. And you can get a lot of bows if you do that. You can run Witch King Sul'adan, or you can run pure Harad is pretty good at 600. You can get the Betrayer and a Chieftain and Sul'adan and something horrible like 24 bows, 20 plus bows, I think it is. I'm not sure exactly, with full rerolls, which is just nasty as hell. There's a lot of powerful lists at 600, but the meta is a little bit odd. You can pull off Assault on Lothlorien at 600. You can get 48 models with that. That is an awkward list to build at 600 points, but I've done it. It looks okay.
There's a 26 model Gil-galad Galadriel list that
high power.
Is probably likely to go top 16, maybe.
Cooking.
If it's lucky.
is that what Luke Hilder's bringing then?
No, Luke Hilder only goes green. He doesn't filthy yellow alliances.
Doesn't do filthy yellow alliances. Well, I mean, last year, Harry Parkhill did pretty well with Elendil and a captain at 600, because Elendil is an absolute monster beat stick, which is funny. Yeah.
If only his army wasn't garbage or very mid.
Three Numenor armies got podiums that were hundreds last year, thank you very much, which is better than a lot of armies.
Right. Let's round out with the questions.
Yep.
So Dave Clubley asks, can we confirm the 2024 Any Heroics GBHL team lineup?
At current date, the Any Heroics team captain, me, has not submitted the Any Heroics GBHL team lineup to the GBHL ranking officer, me. so no, but it's likely to be basically the same as it was at the end of last year.
So I'm not joining Any Heroics, to be clear, despite any evidence to the opposite.
Not this year, anyway.
At the moment, currently, I'm not joining Any Heroics. I'm a consultant who teaches you guys how to win games.
For anyone on Spotify, Dave is wearing an Any Heroics t-shirt with an Any Heroics Zoom background. So
yeah, well, I was just here to conform, you know.
Our next question is, how long has Jordan been in the Mexican cartel? I think we'll have to wait for him to answer that next time.
Yeah, we can't confirm anything or...
Can't implicate Jordan in anything that he can admit to himself.
Clubley also asked for predictions for a top 10 in the league in 2024.
Whatever I want it to be, because I'm in charge of the ranking.
Yeah, I think that'll be another topic probably for a slow news week episode.
I have thoughts, but I won't spill them now if you don't want me to, John.
Nah, go on. I think it's good content.
Well, I mean, if you want
30 seconds or less.
30 seconds or less, okay. Me, Ed Bull, Ali King, Jay Achaya, Ashley Wilger, Jake Rawson, Jakob Krogmaal, thank you. He's almost certainly going to get top 10. And then after that, it becomes very blurry. Those last three spots could be almost anyone. But based on what I know about those players, those seven,
yeah,
I'd back them. I'd put money on those seven being in the top 10.
They're the people
I don't think
who,
there's any...
if they stay on current form,
if they
the
if they compete
years, they could,
at a roughly consistent way they've been competing, so can, like, you know, allowing for me and Jake having a big title race last year, obviously, if those people roughly give the same amount of energy they did last year, I'd be surprised if they're not in the top 10.
Yeah. Next question.
Still Dave Copley, how does any heroics answer to the multiple charges of bullying made against them?
Dave, you smell and you're ugly, so fuck off.
Got,
what happened to Peter?
Peter's actually my first middle name, so it's still there. I haven't removed it. It just doesn't show up as much as it could do.
Why is George the best player in any heroics? Because he's willing to get bust every single round in the team tournament.
He's brave enough to take Thrawn, who is one of the shittest heroes available. He's not really,
because
Thrawn underperforms.
He lost four games in a tournament and still came first.
He's the only player to ever win a 90 whilst also losing four games.
Yeah.
That's it. That's the fact.
What's the airspeed velocity of an unladen swallow?
African or European.
Thank you.
Why does Denby refuse to stop using a useless elf hero asked by Dewey Evans?
I assume this is in reference to either Legolas Galadriel. Or Galadriel.
Yeah.
Get good, Dewey.
I just want to point out that Dewey's been playing longer than you and has never got a second energy boost of 100. So,
yeah,
you know, maybe Dewey, you should try using Gilgalad instead of useless Farhad. Am I right?
Yeah.
Big anyway, oof.
He did beat me in the last game of Into the West. I'm not salty, I promise.
Did Elliot move away because he doesn't like us all?
No, he just likes his girlfriend more.
Yeah. If he liked us, he'd be on the podcast tonight.
Yeah.
Again, Clubley asked, what's the strongest army in MESBG? From your stats, as we covered, probably at the moment, Mordor Serpent had. Yeah. And the strongest army in my heart is whichever army lets me use Big Tilly Alfred, the Warhammer World exclusive model.
Army of Lake Town at small points, Arnor at mid points. Mordor Serpent at every other point.
What did we do with Josh? Short answer, he got a job. He's also currently in Thailand. His annual visit to his long-distance girlfriend, so he's all good.
Ivan asks, does time heal all wounds?
No,
renew heals all wounds on a 4+.
Nice.
When will I use a meta army?
Lack of success doesn't mean it's not meta, that's just player skill.
Every single chance I get,
John is on the bandwagon at all times.
And Elliot asks, why is Suladan so popular and what would we do about it?
Because he has a really cool, like, serpent helmet thing. Yeah. That's literally the entire reason. I don't think the rules come into
it. And his sword.
His sword, if it was his sword, it would disappear as soon as it broke, which happens all the time. As a Suladan player, it breaks very easily.
Suladan's popular because he has a big banner and he's very cheap. Make the banner Harad only for the 6-inch. There we go, sorted.
I don't agree with that take. About the potential change, but also he's too good, he's too cheap.
Yeah,
I think basically you just make him more expensive.
Make him more expensive and buff Harad slightly.
We'll rattle through these last questions. Adrian asks, "What's the worst, best thing you've ever done on an MESBG battlefield, either to yourself or to an enemy?"
Worst, best thing. What does that mean?
As in, like, the most disgusting thing you've done to an opponent. Watch our very first battle report. I think it's turn two. I absolutely punk Elliot and Josh's Boromir through some clever control zone manipulation. It's an absolute piece of art.
CJ asks,
criminal
sorry,
things with the Watcher before. Everything that model does is disgusting.
Yeah.
CJ asks, who's the worst opponent you've ever had to play? Now that I've finally played Steven Into the West, I can definitely say him. Regardless of whether you're winning or losing, you just look smug.
It's important to lose with grace. And if you've come here to have fun by beating me and making me look miserable, you're not going to get that. I'm the worst opponent I've ever had to play. I once played a 1v1 game. I rage quit halfway through because I was insufferable.
Matt asks, what's the first model or set you owned, and what's the first faction you played your first game with?
I remember walking into Plymouth Games Workshop and buying a box of Metal Cataphracts, Easterling Cataphracts, and Kamaldi Easterling on and playing him on foot, wondering why my epic ring wraith was so bad in combat when he cost so many points.
My first thing was a blister of Elrond and Gil-galad, and I must have gotten some secondhand plastic elves because I never had any Numenor. I got some secondhand plastic elves and a couple of blisters of Spear and Shield high elves, and I had high elves.
Our next question is from Tom Patterson. Does Jordan O'Brien like his late night videos? How he likes his MESBG armies?
Tom, you know the answer to that. Why are you even asking?
Yeah.
Come on, don't be silly.
Michael asks, armies you'd recommend for a beginner, good and evil, from your own personal experience?
For me, I think beginner evil, something like Hunter Orcs, it's pretty hard to go wrong with. It works very well at sort of small to mid points, which is good. It's a good starter army. They absolutely smash and they die easily, which means that you can get a good insight into playing battle lines and also understanding how to use your own army dying easily to your advantage, which
and
is a good thing to learn.
And you get lots of games in.
And you get lots of games in because especially at small points, you can finish your game in about 5 minutes.
Yeah. Personally, I'd recommend Minas Tirith and Evil Minas Tirith, which is Minas Tirith and Mordor, if you get standard orcs or Morannon orcs, and Warriors of Minas Tirith. Small points game, 100, 200 points captain, and those are a hero in those. It's very difficult to go wrong with learning the game.
And finally, to round out our questions, from Theodore, he asks, what is your favourite cheese?
It's very bland, well, relatively bland. Better. It's called Port Salut.
Well,
lovely.
Lovely. Thank you for all the questions. And we will be asking for future questions. Please make sure they're about us, because we're very self-important. Our hobby projects, ranking stats and whatnot. We got quite a few rules queries. We're happy to answer those in our own time, but we don't think it makes a very good podcast watching or listening. So yeah,
when we get Jay Clare on the pod, then we'll answer all the rules questions.
Yes. And he will get them all wrong. So thank you very much for listening to our very first Heroic Stats podcast. We hope you join us for the next one. Remember to comment, share, like, subscribe, follow us on Spotify, whatnot. And
don't forget to say hi to Stephen if you see him in person, because he really loves it.
Yeah, say hi to me in person. I really love that. Especially if it's not an event. If you see me in the street and come up to me and say hi, the day that happens, my ego will actually explode. So. Thanks all for listening, and we'll catch you in the next one.
Goodbye.
Bye.